Welcome in to hour number two of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Willie Donick here with you. Derek Mason on a plane, headed back home from Boston, seeing his son DJ. This is the former wide receiver, Derek Mason. Not to be confused, because now that the football coach, Derek Mason, is back in the realm, coaching down the road at Middle Tennessee, it's easily confused. In fact, I've had some people in everyday life going, is D-Mace still going to be on your show now that he's coaching?
I've been asked that.
Yes,
as
it happens.
The suit, I have been like, "Hey, is Derek still going to do the show?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why wouldn't he?"
Oh, you mean Coach Derek Mason?
Wait, is that the coach from Vanderbilt? I'm like, "Yes, it's the same one."
Right, and so they know each other. They talk. So I wanted to clear it up on the front end because D Mason's not here, but Chase McCabe, the suit, has joined me. Caroline Fenton is going to be on to fill in for Jared this afternoon, but we wanted to get a really good guest to try to give us a good scope of what's coming here for college sports as we know it, particularly college football. And we got one of the best here. Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com is with us. So, Dennis, when we said Derek Mason, we didn't want you to go the wrong direction, not knowing anything about our show. So we just wanted to clarify that.
No, I love Derek. Yeah, he's great.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, Dennis, I don't know where we start is always a tough question with this because it's such a huge issue here, and we're going at warp speed with all of this stuff. But let's start with just, I know Tennessee fans are really up in arms here going, what's going on here? I thought you couldn't really cheat with NIL. Now you've got more lawsuits against the NCAA. Everything I'm reading seems to take me in one direction, and that is there's really not much legal ground, if any, that the NCAA has. The world is changing. So it just from the Tennessee perspective, what should they think about potential penalties here, if any?
Well, let's back up for a second because there's so many layers to this, and let's take the latest. Because of what Tennessee has done, which is sue the NCAA for antitrust, you know that they're seeking a temporary restraining order, which in the home cooking of the Eastern Tennessee District, not making any judgments, but will almost certainly be granted on NIL benefits. By this time next week, guys, across the nation, there will be no transfer limitations or no NIL benefit limitations. We will be living in that world, at least temporarily, by next week. Okay, what does the Tennessee lawsuit mean? Again, you have to take this historically. Last July, obviously, they had the big case, 18 level one, Jeremy Pruitt, but they don't get a postseason ban. And in fact, as President Plowman pointed out, got cited for exemplary cooperation. And in her missive this week, basically said, 5 months later, what's changed? Because now we're being accused of basically just, to me, this is all about NICO and Spire and the contract that they signed for $8 million, we all know about that. And the NCAA looks like it's trying to establish Spire Sports Group as a representative of Tennessee's athletic interest, i.e. a booster, and, make this improper conduct. President Plowman even dropped a dime saying, it looks like they're getting accused of institutional control, which is about the worst thing you can get charged with. Now, again, going back to July, if Tennessee's convicted of anything, I guess they would be considered a repeat violator, because if you have these many major violations back to back in this short a period of time, that's what that means. This term goes back to the SMU death penalty. I'm not saying Tennessee will get that at all, but if you do not cooperate as a repeat violator, which Tennessee isn't right now, then you are subject to enhanced penalties. So this we're going to the mattresses for this one, guys. And right now, Tennessee's winning with the temporary restraining order.
So in a general sense, Dennis, I look at it now, we're almost just scratching the surface with where it's going in terms of negotiating power that players have. The new stress and strain that coaches have just trying to keep their players that they have happy and there.
Yeah.
And you're saying we might even go next level, where you can, in theory, go to four different schools in 4 years, whoever is the highest bidder, right?
Yeah.
In theory, that's what we're going for. So what it's almost like, it reminds me, and Dennis, I don't know how much of a baseball fan you are, but in the mid-70s when the baseball players got free agency, in theory, because the way the owners were holding them down, everybody could have become a free agent every year, right? And they had to come up with some sort of system. So how do we try to come up with some semblance of order in this wide open field?
Well, you begin to answer the question when you think of, okay, yeah, that's correct, but there's a salary cap. There's no such salary cap in college. So how does that happen? I mean, I tell people, I cut to the chase. Yes, right now you can transfer as many times as you want. The only guardrail regarding that is you can't play for two teams in the same semester. So if anybody's thinking about that in basketball or football, that can't happen. But you can transfer, at least how the landscape is now, limitless. How do you fix it? I think it's pretty easy, whatever easy means these days. Collectively bargain it. Whoever leads college athletics, and I'll get to that in a minute because there is some breaking news regarding that, with the Big Ten and SEC, says we'll give you X, and in return, and this is a big picture thing, the players, you give us 2 years or 3 years, and you sign this document saying if you're physically able, you're going to play in all postseason games, because that's going to be a thing. I've already written about it in the playoff. That's going to be a thing with the money involved. So you start with that, and you can do it without being an employee. You can do it without unionizing. And I'm convinced, I think that's the only way out. After hearing Kirby Smart after the Orange Bowl and, the joke that was with Florida State, I said to myself, Kirby, this is figured out in a heartbeat. It'll never happen again. You become partners with the players. You collectively bargain. I think this has gone on long enough where I don't think that's distasteful to anybody, is it?
It sounds like that's what has to happen for us to have the product that I think we all want to have.
Yeah, no,
we feel like it's a win-win for both sides, right?
Yeah, and you can see the horizon now. Like for years, like, oh, what are we going to do? There's an expiration date to this. Next January, so less than a year away, this house trial against the NCAA is going to trial in, I forget the venue, but I'll spare you the details, but it is an antitrust lawsuit that class action that if the NCAA loses, and all antitrust lawsuits, if you lose, damages are trebled, it would cost them $4.2 billion. That, in effect, if they don't settle, would be the end of the NCAA, because their budget for this year was $1.3 billion. And they'd be bankrupt. Charlie Baker said recently, I think in that congressional hearing last week, that if one of these verdicts goes through, one half to two-thirds of programs would have to be eliminated. I think people missed the point there. If one half to two-thirds of programs are eliminated, you got no programs to sponsor. There's no NCAA to speak of. So that's where this is. It's going to have to be decided, or else the courts will decide it for them.
We're talking to Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. And, all of this that we're talking about, I think we kind of felt by reading the tea leaves that it was all coming. And so with the news that you alluded to, that the SEC and the Big Ten forming an advisory committee – That's how they all start, right? Advisory committee. Yeah. Let's take a look at things. But basically, this is kind of the beginning of what college sports is going to look like in the future, because I feel like, Dennis, that this is the beginning of the end of the NCAA as we currently know it.
Yeah, I agree. That's what you're referring to, and that just broke within the last half hour, that this kind of formalizes what we think is going to happen. The Big Ten and SEC are going to become the leaders, whatever that means, in major college sports. Because I thought that the next crossroads would be when they start revenue distribution on the new CFP contract, which is going to be $1.3 billion per year. Because it ain't going to be even. given what we know now with the 34 biggest brands at the top in those two leagues. But what they're saying in this release, and it's very carefully worded, an advisory group, including but not limited to recent court decisions, pending litigation, a patchwork of state laws, and complex government proposals. You know what they're saying? Get out of the way. We're going to do this. You know, they're an advisory group. Yeah, they're basically going to take over. And I'm not even talking about a separation from the NCAA, but they're going to have more of a say in the way things happen, to the point that Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, kind of been leaving breadcrumbs throughout throughout the whole thing. Back in June, I think, at the SEC spring meetings, out of nowhere, he started talking about the composition of the NCAA board of directors to kind of run the whole thing. Well, what he was saying, without saying it, there isn't enough Power Five representation. And if there isn't, we will break away, and there certainly will be. We'll run the thing. So that's what this thing is about.
So that leads me right into my next question, because I was going to ask you who, and, you know, we can keep it to football, but who's the most powerful person in college football right now? I think it's Greg Sankey. So if this thing does break away, does he basically become the de facto commissioner?
I don't think he, yes, but I don't think he wants that. He wants a say in the current governance structure. Now, if there's a different, if the NCAA goes away, they'll have to figure it out. But he does not want to be the commissioner. He also doesn't want to answer to anybody who, you know, puts out proposals like, well, just take the top 64 and put them in 8-18 leagues. He doesn't want the SEC to be broken up like that. So he wants the power to, I guess that's the word, power to, you know, guide this thing where it needs to be, with more representation of the power conferences, whatever that is. It's a power four. I'm reading this release. It's probably the power two now. But yeah, he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to play nice with the rest of college football. He wants everybody to know that, and he's not going to say this out loud, but if we want to have 100 scholarships, we're going to have 100 scholarships. If we want to spend X on, you know, on our players, we're going to spend X on our players. Now, they still have to play everybody else, but all this is with the hammer hanging above everybody else. If you don't agree to this, the market has already told us. Big Ten, SEC, will televise you, and you can have your own playoff. And that's really what this is about.
So real quick on my end, could this have, you know, we all view the NCAA as, like, I view the NCAA as an organization that they probably could have prevented a lot of this if they had done their job. and they sit around and they think, it's fine. And, you know, we'll do something about it later. And then they, you know, then they don't. And then they kind of get caught, you know, with their pants down. And these are the things that happen. So had they been more effective, could this have all been prevented and we gotten some of the things that Nick Saban and others wanted, of having more, you know, this laid out and these are the rules, and it, now we wouldn't be in this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. Two things, just two examples. In 2005 or four or thereabouts, I think that's when it was, when the O'Bannon lawsuit was filed. Remember, I mean, we all remember that. You know, he wanted money for having his likeness used on the basketball game. Then Miles Brand, the president of the NCAA, and his team were advised inside the building that, it might be time to allow some of these players to have these kind of benefits. Let's just say the ones that are featured on the front of games. You know, the house isn't going to come crumbling down. Well, the reaction was absolutely not. You know, we're adhering to the strict collegiate model. And it didn't happen. You saw what it cost them. That was the first big blow against the empire, when they lost that case in the Northern District of California, and several other antitrust lawsuits had followed. In 2021, before the NIL guidelines were allowed from the NCAA, a very august and smart and powerful working group was assembled to develop guidelines. Bob Bowlesby, Big 12, Val Ackerman, Big East, Gene Smith, AD at Ohio State. And they worked long and hard for a bunch of months and actually offered guidelines. I don't know exactly what they were, but they were rejected out of hand by the NCAA, and that's why we're here today. Those four just kind of meaningless guidelines that came in July of 2021 really prevented nothing, and that's why we have collectives and all this other stuff. Just time after time, legal decisions to fight lawsuits and spend membership money. Do you know the NCAA spends $65 million a year on FBS football, a sport they essentially don't sponsor? You know, they don't name a champion in FBS. And depending on the year, 20% of that is paying legal bills from this stuff, from head trauma lawsuits, stuff like that. So in answer to your other question, Greg Sankey, whatever happens, somebody's going to have to take that liability piece. And I think the membership is more than happy for the NCAA to keep that liability piece because people need somebody to sue. Because the moment they break away, then they're going to be suing the CFP or these other conferences. So that complicates things. But the NCAA, yes, is at one misstep after another.
Dennis Dodd has been our guest. Dennis, just real quick, in 10 years, is there going to be basically a pro league that the SEC and the Big Ten are in, like a quasi? It's already going that way. You can argue it's a pro league now, especially for the top players. But would they be like an organized pro league 10 years from now and everybody else is doing something different?
I was going to say 10 months. Forget 10 years. No, I think, look, if I've learned anything in these 2.5 years since NIL, if you put 11 chickens in Ohio State jerseys and 11 chickens in Michigan jerseys, you'd sell out the Shoe or Michigan Stadium. There's still that piece of romanticism about college sports where, you know, I walk the same campus as Tom Brady, or I walk the same campus as Earl Campbell, and that little slice of connection keeps it alive. I don't think it'll be pro per se. I think there'll still be some college connection to it in that, yeah, you can go to school if you want. If not, we'll pay for it if you want to get your degree at any other time. But as long as that connection is there, because people love it so much. These last 2.5 years I'm talking about since NIL, and disproved every NCAA theory argument in court that, oh, attendance will go down if you do this. TV ratings will go down. Last year, attendance was up for the first time in 9 years. This last 23 season, TV ratings were at an all-time high. I don't care if Shador Sanders is driving a Maybach. I want to see him play as a fan, as a guy who covers the sports. I think that's what's been proven these last 2.5 years, that we can not only, as fans and the public, stomach this, we love it. It's fantastic. The NIL stuff, I forget about on Saturdays.
Yeah, that's true for sure. Yep. Definitely we're in our neck of the woods. So, Dennis, thanks a lot for your time. Great perspective, as always. Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com.
That's good.
Wow. A lot to chew on there. When we come back, I'd love to hear people's vision of what you think it's going to be like. I said 10 years. He said 10 months.
Oh,
what about 2 years? I don't know. Like we're moving fast. So Tennessee fans, Vanderbilt fans, and how about just fans of Middle Tennessee and different levels of football? Austin Peay, Tennessee State. What do you want to have happen with all of this? 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt. I have a lot of questions on what that's going to look like, right? Can they adjust and stay in this game and be competitive? Because right now they are obviously way behind. We're talking about winless in conference play in football, and they play Missouri tomorrow. They're trying to get their first win. If they don't get it, and whether they win 0 or 3, the question still remains, right? Can you win if you're not at the table with big, big dollars to compete in NIL? Stay tuned. We're going to talk about all this when we come back here on 102.5 The Game.